Welcome to On the Path, where we discuss and explore all things which are related. I am Brett, and I am here with Lucy. How are you today?
I'm very good, thank you. How's your day been so far?
It's been well so far, and I'll kind of cover how I've been feeling in our corners.
Okay, yeah.
Because I've done something stupid, but I'm committed to it. And I have.
I think I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, and I have to see it through. Well, I kind of do, but I don't. But we'll get there. We are in, it was December 6th today. It's Monday, December 6th. We are less than 2 weeks from the series.
Mm-hmm.
There hasn't been, I don't think there's been any news since we covered the red carpet premiere, has there?
I don't think so. I've seen Henry Cavill doing loads of talk shows in the UK. And every time he's on one, there's like a new little clip revealed. So they're giving us quite a lot of little teasers, but no big news, I don't think.
Yeah, for someone as busy as him, you can just tell where in the contract it's these 3 weeks, it is just straight promotion for this show.
You're ours.
Yeah, exactly. And he was on Graham Norton, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was on Graham Norton on Friday. And then he was on a show called Lorraine this morning. I think it was this morning anyway. Yeah, so he's doing the rounds.
A bunch of wild shit seems to happen on Graham Norton, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's one of those shows, like, he's brilliant. He's one of my favorite talk show hosts here in England. And he's really good at getting, like, people comfortable, I think.
Yeah,
they seem to be really themselves and really relaxed. I did kind of notice, though, he was kind of being quite patronizing towards Henry because of, like, Henry's interests. He was sort of taking the mick out of him a little bit for being into, Henry, like, paints these little war, I don't know if he described it as Warhammer.
Yeah,
I don't know
Warhammer.
What it is myself.
Yeah.
Yeah, so he's into painting those little figurines and stuff. And Graham was like winding me up a little bit because he was sort of patronizing him for these interests. And yeah, I don't know if I liked it that much, but usually he's my favorite.
It definitely disarms people when they see someone like him who looks like him, who obviously stays in shape, works out, has all these action roles. You know, Mission Impossible was a big one there. And now he's The Witcher. Yeah, he gets on there and he talks about painting tabletop RPG figurines and building computers and all this other stuff with this fantasy like series and IP. And yeah, I think someone like him is just like, wait, what? Yeah, I don't think too many celebrities on that show are doing anything with Warhammer.
I know, I loved it. But then, bless, Tom Holland was also on it, who is the newest Spider-Man. And I think he could see that Henry was getting a little bit uncomfortable. He kind of jumped in and was like, I want to come run and play Warhammer with you. So I thought,
did bless he really?
Him. He's really, yeah, he's really sweet. I really like Tom Holland.
Oh, yeah, yeah. He seems to be very down to earth, kind of the same way.
Yeah, exactly.
And considering Tom Holland's like 22 now or 20.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's still in his early 20s, right?
I think so, yeah.
Looks all of 15, so I guess...
He's so super young looking.
That Spider-Man age. That explains also, I saw this meme going around. One is people comparing them two to being like the next James Bond or something.
All right.
But I saw something that said December, I think it was December 17th, and it was over Henry Cavill's head, and it was December 18th that I think was over Tom Holland. Yeah, I guess that's when Spider-Man comes out.
It must be, yeah.
Or maybe it was the day before The Witcher. Well, I guess it's like back-to-back on these weekends or something, whenever those days are. So, I think it's Friday. No, a movie would come out Thursday. So maybe Spider-Man comes out the day before? I'm thinking it's...
Possibly, yeah.
Okay. Because, yeah, I'm pretty sure The Witcher, the 17th is a Friday, I think.
It is, yeah, okay. You're right.
All right, so before we get into the main story of The Witcher 3 here, as we continue Family Matters, one thing I want to say is... If you enjoy the podcast, if you like it, if you want more of it, please help us out by just telling people about it. You know, we don't have Patreon, we're not doing donations, we don't have sponsors or anything like that. But the easiest way to support this is just telling people about it. And it can be from anywhere. It can be Reddit, Twitter, anywhere where people like The Witcher or play The Witcher or anything to do with it. Just kind of tell them about it and hopefully they tune in. And then we kind of see where it goes.
I think that's how I found you originally. I just wanted more Witcher content and just typed Witcher podcast into Spotify and ended up finding you. And now here we are. So it's a good way of finding people, definitely.
Yeah. And again, it means a lot, like just to tell people about it. Like that's the number one way to support this. Like I love getting the emails. I love getting the direct messages. But the same thing, too. Also, just interacting with us. Tweet something at us. You know, like I said, the emails are good and all that. But if you tweet a question at us or tweet something out, we can start talking back with it and it kind of creates a discussion and then it kind of goes on. And that's another way you can kind of get in real time our thoughts as well. So if that's something up for y'all to do, you know, we would greatly appreciate it. So we're recording this on Monday the 6th, Tuesday the 7th, so 3 days in the past, as I kind of jump around here. There's a new Gwent cards coming out, and kind of a little picture up here. And we're kind of going to go through them, not really what they do, just the card art, because I kind of want to see, especially what you know about them, Lucy. Okay. So we'll start in the top left, okay? You know who that is, yeah. Right?
It looks to me like Regis.
Yeah, that would be Regis, and I know it's Regis. Oh. I know it's Regis, but I can't remember where I heard someone say Regis. And
I love
just,
it.
Yeah, I know. It's so much more fun to say. It's like Dandelion from the audiobooks. Like, I've heard that so much. It's like, I can't say Dandelion. Because that just kind of jumps all over the place. So like Regis, I don't know. It is Regis, I know. So again, don't email and be like, this dude was saying Regis. I know it's Regis. But yeah, that's a new Regis card in there. And they love
rich.
Yeah, they love him in that vampire form there. So if you like playing vampires, there you go. The next one is Arrakis or Arrakis Queen. And I don't think that's in any, I think that's just kind of in The Witcher 3.
Yeah.
Somewhere I think you fight it. But yeah, there's no like book lore or anything about that.
Okay.
At least that I can kind of really remember too much. The next one is Ardal Epdaihi. You know anything about him?
No, I don't recognize the name. I like his outfit, though.
Yeah, he is a Nilfgaardian officer general. You haven't played Thronebreaker either, have you?
No.
Okay, do you know what Thronebreaker is?
I've heard of it, but I don't know what it is.
Yeah, Thronebreaker is The Witcher Tales. It's basically like a card game.
Oh,
and
I see.
Yeah, and it takes place during the timeline of the books, this Baptism of Fire. And this guy's a Nilfgaardian general. He was part of this conspiracy to overthrow Emir, and he led one of the fronts, one of the corps, in the second invasion that will be covered, hopefully, in the series in the next few seasons. So he plays a pretty good role.
Yeah, I like the sound of that.
Yeah. Next up is Jan Kalvit, who is mentioned in the Witcher books. He will eventually be a emperor. Of Nilfgaard.
Oh, I see. Okay. I think you might have mentioned this when we discussed on the prologue.
Yeah.
Or is there someone else who was also going to be an emperor?
That was Moovran, right? Moovran
Yes,
Voorhees?
That's
yeah.
right. That's
yeah.
right.
He's the emperor after Moovran.
Yes, okay.
I need to think of a nickname for that because Moovran just doesn't sound well to me.
It doesn't like easily.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They'll call him like movie. No, that's not good. That's not going to work. All right. Next up after that is King Henselt of Caedwin. You know anything about him?
No.
Okay, he is most prominently from The Witcher 2. He's the king of Caedwin. He's just an absolute motherfucker. Like, he's just shit. He's from the books, too, and he has some outbursts with Queen Meave, especially, as Meave's just hearing Foltest and Foltest and Henselt just arguing. She's like, oh, my God. Like, you two, like, both of y'all just shut the fuck up, please. And so she's kind of like this bit of sanity in this insane world. But, yeah. He's The Witcher 2 plays a big role. You can decide what to do with him or not. And one thing I was thinking that could be fun, because you haven't played The Witcher 2, right?
Well, I was just going to say I haven't, but I did buy all three of The Witcher games recently when they had a sale on Steam. So I've got it. I do plan on playing it. I just don't know when.
Okay, because I think that would actually be something that we could do, because I've only played The Witcher 2 up to a certain part where you have to fight this monster. You have to fight this monster, the Kayran, but you have to have a silver sword. But in The Witcher 2, you have to craft your silver sword.
Oh, right. Okay.
Well, I hadn't crafted the silver sword, so I couldn't really beat it. And then I was all right, fuck this. I'm done.
You're just careful.
Yeah, pretty much. And then I watched the playthroughs, you know, like the stories, and they've got all these divergent paths. And so I only played it up to that point. But I was like, okay, maybe that might be something that we would actually play through it. And then through this time, it would be kind of the first time for both of us. So that could be something way down the road, you know, if it warrants it. Next up is Radovid the Stern.
Oh, yes, it is. I had a closer look there and I thought I'd recognize him.
Yeah, that's Radovid. We will obviously get to him later in this series. And of course, they show him there. You can't see it because it's kind of cut off there, but that's basically a mage that he's torturing.
Oh.
Yeah, because... Okay. If Henselt was a motherfucker, this dude is...
He's awful.
Yeah, he's Mr. Motherfucker. But again, he's the Stern. And there's a really cool point at the end of the books. And again, this is not a spoiler for any kind of story. He's a kid at the end of the very last book. And there's kind of this for whatever reasons, I won't say, he's watching this parade of people come through Novigrad, and they mention Radovid looking into Philippa's like ocean deep eyes. And I'm like, okay, that's a huge like thing that they ended up doing in the game.
Yeah.
That kind of hits out on. And so when I read that, because I read that after playing the games, like that just jumped out to me. And I'm like, oh shit. Like they're mentioning how much this dude just does not like or is being uneasy at Philippa when he's a child.
Yeah.
And it's like, so okay.
It's always been something there.
Yeah. I was like, okay, that's pretty cool. All right. Going to the bottom right. So you recognize that person?
Well, he looks a bit like Gaunter O'Dim to me, but is that him?
No, that's not him.
He gives me that kind of vibe.
Yeah, he kind of does. That is, that's the King of Beggars.
Oh, I see. Francis Bedlam. Oh, of course, yeah. Now you say it, yeah.
Yeah, so that's his card in there. And again, there's not really much to talk about him. We'll cover him ad nauseum coming up.
Yeah.
But another person, this big fat dude that you can't really see too much of, that is Cyrus, I think, Engelkind Hamelfart. And he is the head of the Church of the Holy Fire. Church of the Holy Fire. The Church of Eternal Fire. Okay. There's the Church of the Holy Sepulchre, which is in real life, Jerusalem. That's real life. That's our world. That's like the main thing of the Crusades. And that got stuck in my head because, you know, Crusades in there. So I said that. This is the Church of the Eternal Flame. There you go. So that's Novigrad. That's him. He's basically the Pope of that. He is also in the books. He's also with that same part of when I talked about Radovid. Mm-hmm. And I don't think Sapkowski likes the Catholic Church or the Pope based on this guy's portrayal.
Okay.
Because first his name is Hamelfart. So
yeah, what a name.
And I don't know if he knew like what fart is in English to Polish, but I kind of can't really get off of that. So yeah, he's not very well liked or represented in book or game.
Okay.
To his left is King Bran.
Yeah.
King Bran, he's the king. Again, they have Jarls, but I guess he had this title of king of Skellige. We'll cover him. He is mentioned in the books. I don't know if we ever see him. I can't remember off the top of my head, but I don't think we do. But say at Pavetta's betrothal when Krak is there.
Okay.
Krak is his nephew.
Right.
And Iced is his brother.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, the Twersek. Yeah. So yeah. He sends to this delegation, he sends Krak and Iced. And yeah, we actually got to see that in the series.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah,
that's interesting. To the left of him, you know who that is.
That's Saris.
That is Saris. So this is.
Is it Saris or Karis?
I say Saris.
I think it's Saris, but when I said it there, I questioned myself, but I think I'm right.
Well, that's kind of, it's kind of like in real life, Caesar, you know, like Rome and all that. It's actually Kaisar.
Oh.
Yeah. Like that was something I kind of heard of. And then Fallout New Vegas, it kept saying Kaisar. And I was like, is that actually Kaisar? And then looked it up and it is like in Latin, it's supposed to be Kaisar.
Oh,
so
okay.
The Germans with Kaiser Wilhelm and the old empire, they're doing it right. They're saying it correctly. Saris is a CDPR creation, though. She is not in the books. She is the son of, oh my God, just do it. Krak. Yeah, there you go. She's a daughter of Krak. Yeah, I said the son. The son is Hjalmar. That's her brother. Yeah. So Krak and then Saris and Hjalmar are siblings. Hjalmar is from the books, though. So he is a book, original creation. Just, and he was actually, quote unquote, betrothed to Ciri.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I got little hints of that from the game.
Yeah, yeah. And again, I can't wait to go over that part because that was really cool on a replay, knowing in the books. And I'll save all that for then because it is really interesting, Ciri and Hjalmar's relationship and what could have been.
Yeah.
All right. So the next one here is the most exciting, I think, for almost everybody, but especially people who have read the books. This is Milva. Yeah.
I saw you tweet about this. I had a little read about
it. I was... Her original card, I do not recommend anybody, if you haven't played Gwent, you know anything about Gwent, and you don't want to be spoiled for the show, do not look up Milva's Gwent card. It is an affront to God what they did with this card. I'm still upset about it. I'm not gonna, it's one thing I won't let go, is I would do anything for them to change that original card art. It's now people are just going to look it up because their curiosity is going to get them.
Yeah, of course.
But no, I still can't believe they did it. It's terrible. Don't do it. But Milva is a hell of a character. I her casting is going to create waves amongst people.
Really?
Yeah. Well, anybody in the, quote, Hansa, Regis is another one. They're going to have to cast somebody in there that can really get these characters. Because anyway, I could talk about that all day. But no, it'll be good. She's going to be a big character. And the last one here is probably my favorite art right there.
Yeah, it looks great.
That is Saskia. She's a CDPR creation. She has a major role in The Witcher 2. And what they've done with her, she is actually in the set of Project Red lore. She's the daughter of Villain Trenton Mirth.
Oh.
Remember that egg that they were saving?
Yes, I think so, yeah.
Remember in the show where Geralt's protecting the egg?
Yes.
The one dragon is dead and Villain Trenton Mirth takes the egg. She's the egg. Like, she's the kid that they saved.
Oh, no way.
Yeah, that's what they've done with her. So she's a dragon. And
cool.
Yeah, it is. And her dragon form, and she has a Gwent card as well, if you look it up. Sesynthesis is how I say it. It's like season thesis or something, however. Sesynthesis kind of rolls off the tongue better for me. But yeah, she is a major role in The Witcher 2. It's kind of a big twist that I ruined about The Witcher 2, but oops. But yeah, that's an awesome looking card. Saskia's are really cool. Saskia. Did my hick draw out there? Saskia is a really cool card. So those will be out by the time this episode is released here on Friday, as y'all are listening now. But yeah, that's something they put in a bunch of characters there. And that's kind of what I care about most about the game is the card art and discussing the cards.
It looks great. Like, the artwork is stunning. I'm really excited to give this game a go later on this week. I still have never played it yet.
Yeah, hopefully this will kind of settle it a little bit, but there's no, you know, it's a card game. It evolves. There's never like a, you got to get in now or you'll be late kind of time. So
yeah.
Yeah. But one thing real quick before moving on is people should listen to it like, damn, there's talking a lot of shit about this. One thing that happened though in Gwent is the lead designer or the main designer, I think it's lead designer, whatever, this person in charge of it, Jason Slama, actually announced during the Gwent Masters Open a few days ago that he is not going to be the lead designer anymore, replaced by a guy named Vlad, who's apparently a vampire. So they're hitting that up very nicely. So he announced that he's leaving, but he's staying with CDPR in another role. And basically what my prediction of this comes to be is I think what they're going to do with The Witcher 4, which has a big leak just came out about that. It's been all but confirmed. I remember reading a couple of years ago from a journalist insider that this has basically been an open secret, that they're working on it. Once Cyberpunk was finished, they put some more people on that. Cyberpunk had a ton of problems, but I think they fixed a lot of them for this major patch that's going to come out, I think, early next year with the next-gen Witcher 3. And so what I'm thinking of, when they get the next-gen Witcher 3 out, when they get this Cyberpunk finish, it's when all hands on deck are going to come for the Witcher 4. And what I'm thinking they're going to do, because this is kind of a things now with the games as service, I think they're somehow going to implement Gwent, the standalone game, with The Witcher 4 in some way. Whether it would be when you go to play someone in Gwent in The Witcher 4, it is linked through GOG to your standalone Gwent account, and you can play other people in that way. So it's kind of like this real-time thing. Or it could just be something to where it's just standalone with it, and you just play like computer opponents. I don't know. I just think it's one of those things that gaming companies now seem to kind of try to tie everything together with online as a way of monetizing it without saying like, hey, there's no microtransactions in The Witcher 4, but if you want to play Gwent, you can kind of do it that way. And so I kind of think that's what it's going to be. I also think because of the way of The Witcher expansion they had with Gwent, there is a ton of old lore that they've done with Witcher schools. And I still maintain, I think I hope The Witcher 4 is that. We go back in time and we get to pick someone from a school, from a Witcher school, and take them on this. So, I don't know. What are some of your thoughts on my stream of consciousness there?
I agree. I think, like, for me, Witcher 4, I think everybody knows it's not going to be Geralt. Like, his story's fully done now.
Yeah,
it has to
be done.
Yeah. I think it would be weird to reopen that, considering everything tied up so nicely. I think, you're totally right. A way of sort of tying it in with the online gaming world would be almost like making it where you can pick your character and then possibly be in some kind of open world. I know obviously Witcher 3 was open world, but even more sort of customizable. So it's not necessarily a linear story that you're following. It's more like you create your character and you go off into the world and do whatever quests you can. It kind of reminds me of that game you were playing. What was it called? New World?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I get those kind of vibes from it, that it might be something like that. But honestly, like, I'm just speculating. I've got no idea.
Yeah, I don't either. But I also, but I do know that they knocked it out of the park so much with The Witcher 3 that almost you can say that getting might have revolutionized open world like gameplay.
Oh, completely.
Yeah, that they can't just do that again. They have to go beyond that. And so to me, I just can't think of anything. Be a cat school Witcher, be a wolf school, be a bear school, be, you know, these different things in that would tie to your play style. Where if you're a cat school, you're more sneaky, like a dex build, if you will, you know, like D&D terms or RPG terms. And the school of the bear, where you're just this hulking, you know, monster fighter that's like a tank or something like that.
Yeah.
And tail it, you know, you have this overarching main story that goes across every school. But then for each school, you have a secondary basic one, like about it. And it would be 100 years or hundreds of years in the past. So you don't have to worry about any book characters really or anything like that. They could create their own lore that they've done with the tabletop RPG as well. That's something I would just absolutely faint if they did something like that.
Yeah, people would love that, like getting to create your, like, especially fans of the world already, like getting to create your own story within that essentially would just be amazing.
We will discuss that game in 8 years when it gets announced. Because I think it was Elder Scrolls 6 was announced 3 or 4 years ago, and there's been no info about it since.
Really? Oh, no.
And so that's the thing with whenever they actually announce Witcher 4, it's like, okay, it's probably going to take another 3 years.
Yeah, I mean, these things, they take so long, don't they?
Besides the spoilers, which I guess I kind of did a little bit of spoilers in there. Blanket spoilers for anything that comes out. I've had some questions, or we've had some questions about talking about certain side quests or Witcher quests. Are we going to do it? There are some that we're going to do, like I've talked about before. We're going to definitely do, say, Tower Full of Mice, that side quest. But if there's one specifically, there's like, man, I really want them to talk about that, especially if it's like a Witcher quest, just send it to us. Say, hey, would you please talk about blah, blah, blah? I mean, we would. Gladly. There's no reason why we wouldn't. So if there's something out there, you know, because we're in Velen right now, that you want to hear about, just send it to us and we will gladly do that.
Yeah, we're still very early on and there's so much and there's bound to be ones that we might gloss over. So if you are really into it, definitely send it in.
Yeah, especially the Witcher quest, because those have kind of slipped my mind more than the side quest for sure.
Yeah.
All right, so with all that out of the way, here we are continuing with Family Matters. We left off last time with the Lubberkin raised and leading us into that cool Velen night. And all I could think of this at first was what Specimen said last week about how ridiculous this looked. And I never really thought about it. But then as it's kind of just floating through the air, I'm like, okay, this does kind of look, this kind of looks funny.
It's ridiculous. Yeah. It's like going from the botchling, which was this like proper little creature, to this quite angelic blue glowing creature that's quite sweet almost. And I think you pass quite a lot of people on your way to this hut and it doesn't seem to bother anyone, so it must have like quite a calming presence now rather than the anxiety it was causing before.
Yeah, as this thing's floating through the air and people are just like, oh, it's like, man, what shit do they see at night? To where this is just like, oh, okay,
so unfazed.
Yeah, no kidding. It eventually takes us to this quaint shack that Geralt just charges into. And this reminded me so much. I'm still in the middle of Red Dead 2. Oh, and I love in that game just barging through doors. Mm-hmm. And people just, oh, like jumping back. And so when Geralt does this, I'm like, Geralt, what are you doing? You just busting through this door at night?
Mm-hmm. No privacy whatsoever.
No. And I guess he's not worried about people defending themselves.
Yeah, it'll be fine.
Yeah, they're not, I guess they're not packing there. So he starts questioning these people. And at first they're kind of coy, like, oh, we don't know what you're talking about. But this wee little lad spills the beans that the duo, Anna and Tamara, were there. And Geralt learns that Tamara is in Oxenfurt. And it's something I've picked on looking at this again. A lot of these kids' images, they kind of just recycle a lot of them.
Oh, yeah. There's so many. Like, there's times where I got confused thinking, have we not met this kid before? But they must just reuse the same model, I guess.
I think they a lot of voices too.
Yes.
Are like the same. And it reminded me of that of Skyrim again. Skyrim, I swear, there was like four guys and maybe three women that voiced every single character in there. And I'm kind of wondering if that was just a very cheap way to get these lines.
Yeah, it must be.
So not hire different people?
Yeah, it must be, because if you think how much dialogue there is as well, it must be cheaper to just have one person working for like a week straight recording all of it rather than getting different people in.
I'd say especially when this was done, I think now, especially in the gaming world context, if you will, with labor and working and all that, that's more aware now of, you know, not crunching or something, but I guess voice acting is one of those very thankless jobs that, oh, you can just go all the time because you're just in a booth talking, right?
Yeah, it must be exhausting, though.
It would. I mean, I know they're professionals, obviously, but I would just think the amount of care they would have to take for their vocal cords and throat.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that would be really interesting to talk to somebody that does that, that does background voices or secondary voices.
I heard Tom Hanks, I think he was on Graham Norton, actually, and he was speaking about when he recorded the voice for Woody in Toy Story. And he said it was the most exhausting thing he ever did, because Woody's voice is so on edge all the time, yeah, and like excited and oh, and he says it's physically exhausting doing that for like 8 hours a day. So I think you're right, it would be completely thankless because people won't understand how much effort it takes.
Well, because I can only imagine that in real life or live action, there'd be cut, okay, we need to reset this, so you get a break.
Yeah, exactly.
You would get, whether it be a minute break or sometimes even a 5 or 15 minute break. But yeah, when you're in a booth, it's, okay, we'll do that again. There's no resetting. It's literally, okay, well, we're still rolling, so take it from this part. So yeah, I would think it would just be nonstop. Yeah. Also mentioned here that this kid kind of just sounded like Gretka to me, which makes sense. A lot of either it be animation or games or whatever it is, if it's a young, like prepubescent boy, is generally voiced by an adult woman.
Yeah, that's so, right.
Because like you mentioned before, you can't have a 8-year-old girl in a booth for 15 hours a day, but you can have a 31-year-old woman
in the
booth to do it. So I was like, okay, well, maybe is this Greca's parents who sent her down the trail of treats?
Oh, maybe, yeah.
And this guy's they're too nice, though. I don't want to believe that they did that.
That's the thing, yeah. And like, he said that they were in trouble and their young boy was sick, and yeah, I don't, they did seem nice. And obviously his wife, we'll speak about later in detail, but his wife convinced him to help Tamara. If she's going to help a random girl, she wouldn't give her daughter away, surely.
Yeah, and we can definitely talk about that now, where the guy says that he saved his boy, like you mentioned, and he gives this quote, and I'll play it. I'll play that clip here so people can hear it as well.
Two ways about it. Me, myself, I'd have never dared to help. But my missus told me a time of war and contempt's come, a time of folk gone wrong. We needs to repay good with good. Who stands by idly does evil as if.
Married a wise woman.
And I loved this because it's hitting on again this neutrality in having to pick a sides. And I've said it ad nauseum that a lot of people mistake Geralt's whole, oh, I'd rather not choose evil, you know, from the very first episode of the season and that short story, The Lesser Evil. And this is basically saying here again, no, you have to pick a side.
Yep. And Geralt agrees. He says, you married a wise woman.
Yeah. And she kind of gives a little head nod. There's a quote that always goes around. I'm sure you've probably seen it on Instagram out there. It says, the hottest places in hell are reserved for those who, in a time of moral crisis, maintain their neutrality. It's largely attributed to JFK and
is that
Dante.
Who it was? Yeah.
Yeah, and yeah, Dante, Dante's Inferno. Have you ever read the Inferno?
No, I haven't heard of it, no.
Okay, that was one of the very first things I remember reading that just latched onto me.
Okay.
And mainly because I was super religious when I was younger.
Really?
Oh, okay. Yeah. Oh, yeah. And so just reading this is just like, okay, man, we're like going through hell. And he's kind of says all these different levels. Well, again, from definitely having studied Dante in times of like the early early Renaissance that he was kind of a part of, that kind of helped it, was this was basically just who Dante didn't like.
Right.
The people in hell are literally people who he didn't like. He was enemies with. And mm-hmm. I was like, I'm going to put you in hell for literary eternity. And the one thing is with the neutrality, it's kind of like this upper level. It's not really in like the lowest part of hell. And the funny thing about this quote is it says the hottest places in hell are reserved for that. The closest part of Dante's Inferno in hell, like where Satan is at the very bottom, mm-hmm. is actually a frozen lake. It's not hot.
Oh.
Yeah, he's entrapped in ice. Like Satan is in ice and he's got like three heads. And yeah, it's not this hottest part where it's the fiery pits. It's a frozen lake.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
That CDPR is showing, hey, there's a side to pick. And if they don't help out, then they're kind of part of the problem.
Yeah, definitely.
But what happens is Anna is attacked in the night by this massive beast with coal for eyes and carried away. And the man still says, any place for her is better than crow's perch with the baron. Yeesh.
Mm, yeah.
So it's just openly known, like, what a shithead the baron is.
Yeah, he says that everybody knows that the baron beat her and nobody had the guts to do anything to stop it, which is really sad.
It is, especially this, because this shack is, it's not really near Crow's Perch. It's not right outside of it. And it's not a little village either. It's kind of unto itself.
It is completely, yeah.
And so for this guy to know, oh yeah, we all knew that they were getting beaten. Like, damn.
Yeah, it's completely common knowledge, as if nobody's ashamed to talk about it.
We start to like the Baron. All these people are just like, no. Like, literally a monster carrying her away in the night is better mm-hmm. than being with him.
Yeah, exactly. That's grim.
So the Lubberkin departs in peace, and we have the option of going to Oxenfurt's and finding Tamara, or heading back to the Baron, whom we go see, and he is sulking in his garden. He is mm-hmm. displeased that Geralt has not gone to the city and seen her, and if we refuse to go, we get this amazing fuck you and middle finger from the Baron.
Gotta be someone you can send.
You refuse to go?
Mm-hmm.
Fuck you! Yet, if you're ever in the area, by chance even, take this and just make sure she's all right.
I thought that was hilarious. Like, I don't think I ever said no at this point, so I'd never seen this until I watched the recap. And I just found it hilarious that he goes, fuck you, and gives him the middle finger. And then there's a second pause. And then he goes, if you do happen to see her, please take this. Just like it didn't happen.
It's so great because it's by itself. There's nothing that leads up. As soon as you pick the choice, fuck you. And then you're right. He dials it up to 11 there. And then very instantly just goes back to about a 2 and goes, yeah, well, here's this doll if you see her. And it's just, oh, okay. So this is where it's just divergent paths to the same thing. Because if you haven't seen her yet, or you say you're going to, he then gives you the doll saying, hey, show this to her. So, you miss out on that. I definitely missed out on that because I think I was being very helpful, Geralt, when I played through this the first time.
So there's one thing we forgot to mention. When we see the Baron in his garden, he is talking about Anna and Tamara, and he mentions Anna's favorite flowers, which I know now is a good thing to remember for later on when we get to Crookback Bog.
Okay, good, because I do not remember that.
You don't?
No,
maybe
I don't.
I think it's only if you go down a certain decision path. There's a decision that you have to make where, God, I can't remember the details, but you have to pick something, and it's to try and save someone.
Okay.
And you have to pick the correct flower.
So the Baron keeps his word and gives us more about Ciri.
So we move into more of Ciri's story, and this is the race. So Ciri has endeared herself to the Baron's company, and she wages her sword against the Baron's best black mare. God, that was hard to say. Baron's best black mare. They race, and obviously we win, but a basilisk interrupts the winner's gloating, and that's all we get from that part of the story. And if we want to learn more, we have to find Anna, the Baron's wife.
There was a lot of, when they're questioning Ciri, because she kills this boar with her sword, she doesn't mm-hmm. spear it, she doesn't shoot it with a bow and arrow, and there's a lot of, whoa, you don't act like women, I know, and you're dressed in a man's clothes, and you smell, mm-hmm. and you do all this. And so it kind of just, it hits on that the not like other girls kind of thing. And I was just kind of wondering, what is your perspective about that?
Do you mean like Ciri or that in general?
Just in general.
I see a lot of this on TikTok where it's like, we call it like a pick me girl.
Yeah.
Do you see that?
No, I know about it. Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't think Siri is a pick me girl because she's not going around saying, I'm not like other girls. I do it this way. I do it that way. She's, you know, this is men putting this image onto her, I think. But I know that everything that I see on TikTok kind of making fun of this whole thing, I don't think there's many girls genuinely like this anymore. I think it's a phase that girls go through as a teenager where they're like, we're sort of taught that girly things are annoying and, you know, you don't want to be considered annoying. So you're like, I don't like makeup and I don't like doing girly things. I'm not a normal girl. I think, you know, I definitely went through that phase when I was a teenager. But you definitely grow out of it and realize that it's kind of like this perception that not necessarily men, but definitely like patriarchy is putting on to women that if you are super excited about girly things, that it's annoying. But it's definitely something that you grow out of. I'm rambling here because it's something that I've been through.
You see it a lot over here, at least with sports and yes. liking sports and knowing about sports. And then, oh, I just want to watch football and, you know, have some wings and drink a beer. Mm-hmm. It's like that's perfectly fine, but then it becomes when you start kind of saying that, it's almost like an overcompensation thing.
Yeah, I get what you mean. I think so, you feel like you have to prove it. But then, like, there's a lot of people who, there's a lot of women who genuinely have these interests, and then you get questioned by men usually. So, for example, if you say, oh, I really like football, they'll be like, oh, well, tell me the name of this coach's husband, or tell me the name of this coach's doctor. And it's like,
no, yeah,
you don't need to know. I just enjoy watching it on the telly.
Music is another thing with that too.
Yeah, when people wear band shirts.
Yep. Oh, you have a Metallica shirt on, huh? Well, when did Master of Puppets come out? Like, who fucking cares?
Exactly. I just like the shirt.
Yeah, and it's always weird too when I see or hear about guys doing that, because it's, why are you like questioning them in that sense about it? Like, you can just be like, oh, hey, have you seen him in concert? You know, you can talk about stuff. Or, oh, you don't have to ask him a question like that. You'd be like, oh, yeah, I saw them in concert. I did this. Or, oh, you mentioned like something about it. But yes, it is great. But my favorite baseball team is the Oakland Athletics. It is not a very popular team at all. It is a very easy to spot hat because it's green on top with a yellow bill. Every so often I'll see somebody wearing that hat. And now nobody's a fan of the team. And so I'm not questioning them to be like, oh, hey, when did they win the World Series? I was like, oh, are you a fan of the team or do you just like the hat? And it's every time, oh, I just like the hat. I'm like, damn. I'm like, well, it is a nice hat, so thank you for supporting.
You just want to find some more fans.
Yeah, exactly. I just wanted to talk to someone about the damn A's, but everyone's just like, no. First off, they're like, baseball? Who the fuck watches baseball? It's like, okay, I hear that.
A lot of time people are just gatekeeping.
That's something especially with The Witcher and like the books and all that, that I don't want it to be like, just because I'll say certain things, you know, doesn't mean I'm gatekeeping it. Like, I'm like, well, you know, the books, they do this. I'm just comparing it.
So, oh, no, totally. I don't think that's gatekeeping at all.
No, but I think there's I just think there's sometimes, and maybe like the way I'm saying it, some people I think might just take it as that. But I've tried to at every moment say, I don't control a fandom. I don't care that much. Because, oh, someone came in my stream like last week 2 weeks ago and was just like, Triss is better than Yen, or Triss over Yen. I'm like, bro, is that supposed to wind me up? Like, I don't care, man. Like,
yeah,
I don't know. Maybe they found a super old podcast to me when I actually did care about it. But
people say that in mine all the time as well.
Yeah, I'm just like, okay, cool, man. Like,
just love to try and cause an argument. My favorite thing is to just go, yeah, cool.
Yeah, I'm like, all right. And if I do, I'll condescendingly say at times, I'm like, okay, well, it's nice to know you haven't read the books, so.
Yeah.
That's when I'm feeling kind
of... You're being that guy.
Yeah, that's when I'm feeling feisty, if I want to actually, like, get into it with someone. I'm like, hey, I remember when I didn't read the books. Because, like, oh my God, I found an old clip from me when I was playing Gwent in... It was, like, 2018. It's one of the earliest clips. It was from beta, and my avatar was of Triss.
Oh, no.
I know. I looked in, and I'm like, oh my God. I had Triss as an avatar. I did. I couldn't believe it. I'm like, maybe this was... Because I had read the books by then, or maybe that's when I was reading them. So how do you feel about horse racing in games?
I don't mind it. I feel like with this game, well, with this race in particular, the race isn't long enough that you run out of stamina on the horse, so it's pretty easy to win. Other races in the game, I find if you just block people, they can't get past you. So I find them easy to win, but I also kind of don't care for them that much.
Yeah, this one was quick, and I appreciated that.
You don't like them?
No, I don't. But like you said, if it's short, that's fine. Because I was replaying the GTA 3, the definitive editions that came out. And there was one main story. You had to do it. This car race was like over 5 minutes long.
Oh, really?
It kept going. And then I finally like crashed. My car kept blowing up. I'm like, I'm done with it. Not doing it. And then there was a main quest on Red Dead where you had to beat train. And like two times I kept running into this train and I'm like, oh my God. But that actually lets you skip.
Oh, good.
The quest, if it didn't, I ended up completing it anyway. There's another quest I actually had to skip, but I appreciate that. But no, the horse racing, to me, it always just seems needlessly draw something out.
Yeah, like there's no real point to this.
Yeah.
It could have been a cutscene.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm thinking, okay, well, maybe if something happens while you're racing, then maybe you can do that because it can kind of catch you off guard. Like maybe if this basilisk would have attacked in the middle of the race.
Yeah.
And you had to swoop out of the way, something like that, I'd be like, oh, okay to do it. But yeah, this, and it doesn't matter, like you said, it doesn't matter if you win or lose.
Yeah,
you get interrupted by this attacking, so it's not that big a deal. But the GTA 3 car race, good God!
I've never played them.
They're really rough. Like that GTA 3 was really rough. I would not play that one. I would say if you're gonna play one, obviously play 5 because that's the newest one.
Yeah,
but I think 4 is pretty good. It also, what I love about them though is the same way I love the Assassin's Creed games, where I'm more about the exploring and wandering around in these cities. And so GTA 4 is New York City, and GTA 5 is basically Los Angeles.
Oh, cool.
So, yeah, it gives you a good kind of feel. You know what I mean. A decent feel of, hey, this is like this big, gritty city, like a Gotham City almost thing with 4, and then this open, sunny California.
Yeah.
And sprawling, because Los Angeles, my God, is Los Angeles just sprawling. That's all it is.
Uh-huh.
It's the opposite. New York is all on top of each other, especially like Manhattan. And then LA is the opposite. It's like everything's imploded and gone out to every which way. Yeah, they're both for the two most well-known cities in the United States, they are so completely opposite in feeling. Because New York, you walk everywhere. You take a subway. In LA, no, you're driving.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
That would be so annoying.
Oh, a 4 mile. When I was out there for the few weeks I was staying out there, a 4 mile drive could take 45 minutes.
Oh, is it just so busy?
It's just a billion cars. You know, there's no subway or anything like that, really. So, yeah, it is a nightmare. I do not recommend going to LA. New York, yes. New York, absolutely, but not LA. One thing that Siri says here, you can choose, is that you can say that she trained at Kaer Morhen. And the guys are just like, oh, isn't that what them witchers there? And they don't seem that impressed that this woman trained with witchers. They ask about potions, and I just don't understand how these people's minds aren't blown at the idea of witchers in all its form.
Yeah, I think especially because, well, I don't know how well known it is in the game or with these people in particular, but women are not supposed to be witchers. So to me, that would be the most shocking thing that, you know, they're obviously very impressed with Ciri, and like we were saying, they're mentioning a lot how she's not like a normal, inverted commas, woman. So for her then to reveal that she's been training with witchers, that must kind of add up in their mind somewhat.
Yeah, one of them actually says, you're a woman, isn't that just for guys? And she's like, well, yeah, she goes, well, I did everything but the mutations. And to me, that kind of makes it more impressive.
Oh, definitely, yeah.
That she didn't go through all these superhuman things, that she's doing it on her own. So at that point right there, of course that dumbass is just like, oh, I bet you can mount a guy, but can you mount a horse? Race me.
Yeah, he's ridiculous.
Bro, did you not just see what she did hunting the boar? Did you not just hear that she trained with witchers? No, you have to pull out your proverbial big dick there and try to get this woman down.
He's still so unimpressed by it all and still just kind of reduces it to one thing.
I would expect that, though, from this company. Baron is probably just the only guys around, and
well,
hopefully that would be it. What do you think about her wagering her sword for a horse?
I think she is obviously very confident in her abilities. I actually was watching what happens if you win or lose the race. I don't know if you ever actually end up giving away your sword, even if you do lose the race.
I'm pretty sure, and we'll get it when we get the finale, when we get the finish to this story, but I think like the Bassic interrupting and what happens, I think it's one of those, we'll call everything even.
Yes, yeah, that sounds about right. So the Baron tells us to find his wife, and then we will learn the rest of the story with Ciri.
No time for the wife as we head to Oxenfurt, my favorite place in the game. We go here to find Tamora. The Baron gives us the pass to enter, but you can also get one from a quest if you have not met the Baron yet. As we walk through these lovely cobblestone streets, we get to Tamora's place, and she has less than zero interest in reuniting with her father, despite Geralt's assertions that he may be a changed man. He says he knows evil men, and the Baron is not one of them. So for them to put that in coming from Geralt's mouth, what do you think about that?
Yeah, I had forgotten about this line, and it's quite meaningful, really, because we've been on such an up and down journey with the Baron in terms of do we like him, do we not? And he's done some pretty awful stuff, especially considering we've come straight from this man who said anywhere is better than being with the Baron. I think this was quite a nice bit from Geralt here. And I sort of trusted Geralt's opinion at this point. It sort of settled my mind, thinking, okay, he's done awful things, but he's a good person at heart.
What I love about this is, especially seeing Tamara's reaction, is there's different sides to it. And you and me and Geralt, who are on the outside, we don't have any biases towards it. We come in and we see what's happened. We've heard what's happened from at least the Baron's side. And we, even after we hear what happened from Tamara's side, we can easily be like, okay, this guy was really bad, but he's changed and we can forgive him. And that's easy for us to do. But someone like Tamara or Anna, they don't have that luxury because it happened to them. And this guy who was their husband and their father betrayed their trust and betrayed their protection. And he broke this contract, if you will, in the way he acted. And it's perfectly okay for them to be like, I don't ever want to see this guy again. And we're like, oh, no, he's changed. She's like, I don't care. That trust was broken. That bond was broken. And they can't ever forgive it. And so I think that's the thing really to discuss here is just the differences in us looking at it and saying like, oh, I can forgive him. It doesn't matter because we're not involved.
Yeah. No, I totally agree. And like, it's such a, like, that would be such a horrific thing to go through, like, especially as a daughter, like, because he never beat Tamara, did he? It was only Anna.
Yeah.
And but to watch your father do that to your mother, I think would be, you know, equally as traumatic. So why would you ever forgive him? Like, why would you ever forgive your father for doing that? So I completely understand Tamara's standpoint on this, regardless of what Geralt says about him being a changed man.
So Tamara backs up this story of Anna's hands being on fire and the monster attacking from the woods. And we did mention it earlier, but Tamara did actually want to go after and try to help Anna. And Wojtek, this villager, basically convinced him, like, no, you're going to die. Like, escape. One question that came to me is, man, Tamara's just up here in Oxenfurt. Like, her mom got taken by this monster. You know, what is she just doing up here? And we find that out because she has powerful friends that will help her. And this is our introduction to the Church of the Eternal Fire.
So we find out that she has just sort of been resting up, I think, after being through what he describes. I think the guy's name is Graydon or Gradin. He sort of describes her as going through a pretty traumatic event. So she's been resting up whilst they decide how to go forward with finding Anna.
And I haven't heard yet, annoying Gwent card.
All right.
The whole syndicate faction in Gwent, I just hate. It's the one thing I wish they didn't really put in the game, was that faction.
All right.
It's just very different than the other ones. Mm-hmm. And his card basically just destroys something that has a bounty on it, which that way, it's just really annoying. Because you know what's coming, and a lot of times you can't stop it, and it's usually like a big point swing. So it's a very annoying card, but it's a cool-looking card, and I will get to it, but I kind of wish someone like him might have actually had a bigger deal, because maybe some of the witch hunters we meet, they might all kind of be just kind of blanket bad.
Yeah.
And so,
yeah, I don't think anyone particularly stands out or anything.
Yeah, and so to have someone here who is with Tamara, it's where it's like, okay, he's not good, he's not bad. The witch hunters are pretty bad, you know, when we get to them. But, you know, maybe just have that little gray that maybe wasn't there with them. But he joins them and kind of needles the Witcher because magic, everything about that, we will come to learn that they are they are not on the side of. So obviously a mutant freak, he's not really going to be at ease with. Geralt says Tamara is free to do as she wishes. As, you know, the guy's like, are you going to let her do that? And he's like, oh, she can do whatever she wants. So look at Geralt. Geralt helping to smash that patriarchy.
Exactly. I think she really appreciated Geralt doing this as well. She makes sure she thanks him for respecting her decision. And it probably helps their relationship later in the game, I think, with her. She probably trusts him, I think, a bit more because of this.
And they have a very, very back and forth where she kind of is not sarcastic, but just very dismissive of everything he says about the Baron. Oh, he misses you. Oh, here's this doll. He presents the doll. And she's basically like, what is this supposed to, like, make me think I'm a kid again, blah, blah, blah. And the Baron's trying, but again, I just think the damage was done.
Oh, totally, yeah. But she even says, oh, who? Oh, him? I've totally forgotten about him.
When we first get in there, we talk to this guy, Wojtek's brother, I believe who it was. And he's like, okay, I'll go get her. And this scene comes out with his cat.
Oh, yeah.
And did it stick out to you?
It did, because there's cats all over the game. And I always notice them. And this scene, it's when we're waiting for Tamara to come downstairs. Yeah. And it just kind of, the camera looks at this cat for a little bit longer than I would have thought it would. And I never really understood why.
I know cats have always been linked to magic or magic users. So I was kind of thinking, okay, maybe it's hitting on that. But it did. It lingered so long and they're kind of staring at each other. Okay, maybe if Geralt was a cat school witcher, it might mean something. But looking into things, this is Nibbles the cat. And this comes from the Witcher wiki. And it says on there, the truth is Nibbles was born as a filmmaking trick due to a technical necessity that came up. Reveals Seta Project Red cinematic artist Kejetan Kupusinski. Kupusinski.
Perfect.
Okay, yeah, we'll take that. I'll take that. When Nibbles first appears in the Family Matters questline, Tamara Strangler is walking down a set of stairs before meeting with Geralt for the first time. And we needed a diversion for that short period of time. So I sat down with one of the quest designers and we added a cat sitting on a table to the scene. We had it play a small role where it would interact with Geralt by exchanging stares with the Witcher, distracting players as Tamara would descend the staircase. I think it worked.
Oh, definitely. Because it got me thinking. I was like, what is this? Because as well, throughout the game, cats are kind of notoriously aggressive towards Geralt. Like if you walk up on a cat, it'll start hissing, it'll run away. And this one was quite calm and just sitting, making eye contact with Geralt. So I was thinking there was going to be a lot more to this cat than there was, but obviously it was just a distraction.
There are cats in the game. It'll be fun going through this again because it might be Nibbles coming back. Because like many cats, Nibbles proved inexplicably endearing once the team got to know him. To this day, we have no idea who named the cat Nibbles, but we liked the end result so much that it became an inside joke in the cinematics department, so we gave it a few more roles to play, says Kupusinski. And you actually, on your stream yesterday, you came across Nibbles.
Did I?
Yeah, I said it in your chat.
Oh, where was that?
Olgierd's the house of Olgierd.
Oh, yeah, of course. Oh, of course, I forgot about that.
Yeah, because you're like, oh, a cat, and I was like, Nibbles.
Oh.
So, yeah.
I'm going to be, like, constantly on the lookout for Nibbles now.
Yeah, if you go to the Witcher wiki, it tells you all the times that he shows up.
Ah, oh, perfect.
Yeah, that's the one time in Hearts of Stone. But yeah, it'll be interesting to go back and see it. So I want to ask you, who is your favorite animal companion that you've had playing any game?
I was going to say in Red Dead Redemption 2, I get extremely attached to the horses. But there was a lot of times where I would get them killed. And honestly, it was heartbreaking. So I stopped getting attached to them.
I have not killed my horse once. What are you doing to kill your horse?
I don't know. So there was this, I had one horse called Mabel. Not Mabel. Yes, it was Mabel, yeah. So I had a few that I ended up killing, but I got particularly attached to Mabel. I was on this mission where you're on a train. So you're doing some kind of train robbery or something. I can't remember exactly what it was, but you don't need the horse. And in the middle of this mission, I press the button that calls the
call
horse.
To call it, oh.
And so the horse is just running along behind the train. I can't see what's going on, but I can see, you know, when the wee image comes up on your map that the horse is there, and all I see is the horse and then the saddle, which means the horse has died.
Oh my! So when
because you're in the middle of a quest, you can't go to get it. You can't go and revive it. So
it doesn't come back.
No, it was dead.
Wow. Okay.
So you can revive them, but yeah, you have to be with them.
But if you don't revive it, then it's gone forever?
It's just dead and the body is there.
Oh,
so then there was this horrific moment on my stream where there's this lovely horse on the train track. So I was thinking, oh my God, like I have to move this horse corpse off of the train track so it's going to cause an accident. So horrific. Like had to lasso the horse body and pull it off the train tracks, which was horrendous.
It worked?
And it works, yeah. Yeah, you have to move it off the train tracks and then I set it on fire.
Jeez, I guess that's a good way.
It's like a Viking way of going.
Yeah, there you go. You couldn't set it down a river though?
No.
It's too much trouble.
Yeah, couldn't lift it.
Okay. No, I did that in a shootout in one of the Sadie missions. I guess in the middle of the shootout, I called the horse over. So after it's done, like right behind me is my horse dying. And I'm like, oh God.
Oh no. And did you manage to revive it?
Yeah, I did. Sadie's like, you know, Arthur, get over here. I'm like, no. I'm like sprinting the opposite way. And I'm like, if I have to fail this mission, so be it. But I went back there. I've revived it a ton. I crashed my horse once or twice every playthrough, just straight up accidentally
going,
a rock comes out of nowhere.
Yeah.
Or I look at something and just, boom, and I just go flying. And it's just like, oh, okay. That's my story right there.
Can you think of any other games where you've got an animal companion?
Yeah, the biggest one to me, and it was because it was the first game when I kind of got into games like this, it was Fallout 4 Dog Meat.
Okay.
You get a dog, and you get this dog within the first hour or so.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I kept it like the whole time. And it's the same thing where it can't die. Companions can't die in that game. But you're fighting and Dog Meat goes to get someone and someone kicks it or shoots it. And it's on the ground like struggling. And it's you just go into just, I guess, mama bear mode.
Oh, totally.
Once that happens. Yeah. And then you just start blasting the shit out of everybody. And then you go and you like inject the dog with something. It gets up and like licks your face. And it's like, okay.
That's so sweet.
Yeah. Far Cry 5, you can get a cougar, a bear, and a dog.
Oh, God.
As companions. That's the best part about that game, just rolling around with a bear and a cougar companion and just killing all these fucking cultists.
I think in the Far Cry 6, which is the newest one, which came out October this year, you can get this little sausage dog. And honestly, I was ready to buy the game just for that.
Yeah. Do you remember the dog's name?
He's called Chorizo.
Chorizo, yeah, of course, sausage dog Chorizo. But not
so
only,
sweet.
But not only that, but what's the key part about Chorizo?
That he's got no back legs.
He's in a wheelchair.
He's in a little wheelchair, bless him.
And he's got like wrench and like ammo that comes and gives it to you.
Yeah, I think what you use him as in the game is if you want to play stealthily, you send him out as a distraction. And then you can sneak up on whoever he distracts and kill them in a more stealthy way.
Oh, they like pet him?
Yeah.
Oh.
Quite clever.
It is. It's also like taking care of their generosity. Do they ever like kick him or like shoot him?
I don't know. I haven't got the game yet. I'm going to wait until I get my PC, but I'm actually so excited to play it. I love Far Cry games.
Okay. Yeah, Chorizo and the dog.
So sweet.
I saw that little wheelchair and I'm like, okay, if that dog actually does get like hurt or someone like kicks the dog, like, oh my God.
Yeah, I'm not ready for that.
You should nuke those guys.
So what say we go find us a witch? Towards the village of Midcops, we come across Kira Metz, who, after telling a load of peasants to go and scrub their barn, disappears into a portal and jumps into a bath. This is the first time we meet Kira and she's looking fabulous. What's your opinion on Kira?
So Kira is a book character.
Oh,
okay. When I first played this, I had no idea. I'm like, oh, it's some blonde with a low cut dress and an ankh is here in the middle of nowhere. And then you kind of learn, you know, their backstory. And yeah, she's barefoot out there like talking to them and she goes into this portal. And in this bath where she's just very showing off. But Kira is someone from the books. Her and Geralt did not hook up. And from what I remember, there wasn't an explicit... Every sorceress basically wants to fuck Geralt. Like, they do.
Yeah.
And like Sabrina, oh man. I think they hit the nail on the head so well with Sabrina in the series.
Oh, really?
Well, especially with just how attractive the actress is.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like we
she's
talked
amazing.
About, they're all attractive, but like Sabrina in the books is, She's very much a antagonist, if you will, to Yen,
okay.
a foil.
Yeah.
They do not like each other in the books at all. And so Sabrina's always needling to Yen just about how hot Geralt is and just how much like what she'd want to do to him and where she shows up. I'm not going to say where she shows up, but everyone's together. And I'm pretty sure it's like her dress is very high cut, like in the thigh. Like she is very much showing off. What I got from her is Sabrina is the like hottest of all the mages. Maybe not the most beautiful or gorgeous, but it's just like Sabrina is hot. And so with Kira was kind of there. She, you know, she'll play a part in the series coming up. It was interesting for them to put her in here because she was always like the finer things. And so for them to put her in this middle of a village hiding out is the worst place in the world for her.
She is very irritable about living in the country, and she certainly lets Geralt know about it. There's a lot of quips. She's not shy in the slightest. She is very openly sitting topless in the tub. She does not shy away when Geralt rocks up. She does tell him to turn around as she gets out of the bath, but other than that, she's very much on show. Which kind of made me think that there was history there, because you can sort of tell from their dialogue that they know each other. They've got quite a little bit of banter. They're giving each other a little bit of stick. But I sort of thought they had maybe got together in the past.
No, again, unless something has completely slipped my mind, there is something that happens at a very pivotal moment that you can say maybe kind of brought them closer together,
right.
But they never really hooked up. And Kira is a very, very small part of the book. She does not play nearly as big a role as, say, Triss or Philippa, or even at times even like Sheila, to kind of what happens. So she's very much a very secondary mage of the lodge, if you will.
Yeah.
There's a streamer, her name, Basic White Girl. Do you know who that is?
Basic Wit Girl,
Wit
yeah.
Girl, yeah. Is she actually pronounced Wit?
Yeah,
okay.
I think so.
Okay, I just kind of said, well, okay, Basic Wit, yeah. Have you seen her bio on her Twitch?
Yeah, because Basic is one of my favorite streamers ever, right? I've followed her for so long, and I recognized it as soon as you wrote this in the notes. I was like, that is Basic's bio. And I didn't know why you had written it, because I thought, I've never spoken to Brett about Basic. But I find that so funny. She definitely sells bathwater.
Yeah, so that's her bio, the streamer. And yeah, go check her out. Good Texas girl there.
Yeah, she plays a lot of Red Dead Redemption 2 as well. She's very much maining that game right now. And I love watching Texas people play horse games.
Yeah, so I'm going to be more privy to anybody from Texas. But yeah, her Twitch bio literally only says, Kira Metz definitely sells bathwater. Okay. I guess she would.
Yeah, I get that vibe. I totally understand what she means.
Especially to get out of Velen.
So we speak to Kira about Ciri, and it turns out that an elven mage has also been asking Kira about Ciri, and not some flea-ridden Scoia'tael slob either. Kira says that this mage has been hiding in some elven ruins near the village, and she will lead Geralt there.
This quip, if you will, about a flea-ridden Scoia'tael slob definitely has to do with that history where something happened. So because of that, she's not going to be a fan of the Scoia'tael because of what transpired.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, so that's kind of funny seeing that when she's like, I'm like, damn, what an unnecessary shot. Oh, that's right.
Oh, now it makes sense.
Now it makes sense that she's like this flea-ridden Scoia'tael slob. And the elven mage. And yeah, once we get to that elven mage, we'll kind of discuss the differences in the types of elves from the Wild Hunt NL elves and the Scoia'tael continent on Sade elves. So we'll cover that more kind of once we get into, I guess you can say, more of a background of what this elven mage is up to.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that. So Kira says that she'll lead Geralt there because she has some unfinished business with this elf, as he promised her something but did not deliver it.
I think I remember what that is, but I'm not.
I don't remember. I'm going to have to watch the rest of that quest after we finish and remind myself.
Yeah, I think it might be something that she gives us.
Yes, possibly.
I think that's what it is. But to hit on like what you said before about thinking Kira and Geralt have a history, this portal she goes into, there's just rabbits just fucking.
That's how the scene like closes out, isn't it? Like, they're finishing their conversation and there's two rabbits that just start going at it.
I think it has to do mainly with Kira's mindset.
Yeah, because this is her little world that she's created, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think she's just really horny.
Must be, yeah.
Because she's got nobody out there because it's just a bunch of peasants and she doesn't meet with anybody but these villagers. And then here comes Geralt, whom she knows.
Handsome Geralt.
Yeah, and reminds her of her old life. And, you know, Geralt's hot to everybody in this. And she's just getting in this bath. And, yeah, I think that's her psyche coming out. Maybe,
no,
maybe a hint to Geralt, like, hey, maybe these rats are going at it. Maybe he'll want to.
Yeah. Trying to plant the seed in his mind.
All right, next up is our corners, where we discuss something that you may or may not be interested in that we'd want you to know about. Could be a book, movie, show, food, anything on the docket. So, Lucy, what is it for you this week?
This week, I have been revisiting a game that got me through lockdown. I've been playing a lot of Warzone. I don't know if you've ever played it or if it's your sort of thing.
The last Call of Duty that I played was World at War.
Oh,
I think that was 2008.
Yeah, that's an old one. But very good one.
It was, but I do remember this, and this is really going to age me, is I remember the first Call of Duty back in 2003, and that was actually the first game that I ever got into, if you want to say, quote, competitively. Like, we had a clan of everybody, and we used TeamSpeak and GameSpy. Do you know what any of those are?
No, I don't.
God, I just sent people into a fucking... fit right there. But no, TeamSpeak was how you would talk to people, like we're using Discord now.
Yeah.
And GameSpy was this service you would use to match up with people to play.
Oh, I see.
Like online.
Right. Okay.
Yeah, it's a way to go online. And so, yeah, that was, you know, 18 years ago. But I do want to play the latest one is a World War II one also. So I might eventually get down on that. But no, Warzone, I think I played a little bit of it, but with shooters, oof. If you don't keep up with them, they can be rough.
Yeah, so it's definitely... So when this game first came out, which is probably nearly 2 years ago now, I picked it up the first week, probably actually the week before we went into lockdown here in England. And I hadn't played a Call... I used to be very into Call of Duty. I would buy it every year up until about Modern Warfare 3, I think. So I've been out of it for a few years, but... Then when we were going into lockdown, I thought I'll buy myself an Xbox and I'll just do it, you know, for something to do. And we played every lunchtime, every night, and we're really into it. And then as I got into streaming and Witcher, I stopped playing it as much. And now that I'm out of it, it's so difficult to jump back in. I feel like you've got to keep on it. You've got to keep leveling up your guns and stuff. Like, it's not something you can just casually dip in and out of very easily. Which is kind of a shame, really, because I don't want to play it all the time anymore. I just want to play it every now and then.
Yeah, I wish there was a better way to match people with abilities, because I got super into PUBG Battlegrounds.
Oh, yeah.
When that came out. I mean, like, playing it all the time. Me and my then-fiancé at the time, like, we'd play it together. And so I got, you know, pretty good at that. And then when Apex first came out, I was super into that. And so I got pretty decent at those. And then I just kind of stopped playing them altogether, was playing other games and not doing it. And then going back to Apex or trying Warzone, I was so bad. I actually tried to play PUBG about a month or two ago. It's so bad. I'm like, okay, unless I'm actually going to put hours into this...
Yeah,
it's just not even going to be fun because it's awful. And I'm just spraying everywhere and I'm like looking, you know, because once you get these games down, you can pick up stuff real easy. You know what it is and you can click, you know, buttons. Now I'm just walking over something, just hovering.
what is this?
I'll kind of compare it to this gun and then I just get fucking shot.
Yeah. And in Warzone, especially, you just don't. I think because Warzone is Call of Duty, you have that kind of familiarity with it. Like, I went into it kind of knowing, you know the HUD, you know what buttons to press, you know what certain things look like. It's kind of always been the same. But then I tried to play Apex and that's like a whole different thing. Like, I found Apex so, so difficult to pick up. Like, the movement mechanics are so different. And obviously there's like all the different colors of guns and one's better than the other. And I just don't know what I'm doing on Apex at all.
Yeah, Apex is so fast. And
that's
why I liked it, because like PUBG is so slow. It's the opposite. It's going for that hyper realism. And, you know, Apex, you're just kind of sliding and jumping all over the place. And I like that kind of different juxtaposition between those two. But yeah, it's FPS and shooters like that. That's a young person's game. I think I'll leave that to y'all and I'll enjoy my time with it from 20 years ago with Call of Duty.
The reason I've been playing it a bit more recently is because the new map is about to come out. I think it actually is coming out either tonight or tomorrow. So we've been in the same map pretty much for the full 2 years. They have kind of reskinned it a little bit, but it's essentially been the same map. So I think tonight might be the last night you can play on Verdansk, and then tomorrow we are going to a new map called Caldera, which is more of like a tropical island setting, which looks really nice. Like, the colours and everything is so much brighter than the current map. But yeah, I feel kind of sad that Verdansk is going. Like, as much as I don't really play the game anymore, it 100% got me through lockdown. Like, before I started streaming, all I did was play this game with my friends, and it like was my go-to in the evening. So I feel a little bit bittersweet that it's going, but I'm excited for the new map.
Yep, out with the old, in with the new.
Exactly, yeah.
All right, so my corner, I did something dumb that I alluded to at the beginning, and every so often I try to do these monthly workout challenges. And because I'm going back to teaching and going back to full-time working in January, I was like, okay, I'm going to kind of take December off. I'm not going to sub. I'm not going to do anything. I'm going to do this workout. And so what I started this out as, every day, I was going to run a mile, and then through a circuit, do 500 core moves, you know, crunches, frog, you know, stuff like that. 300 mm-hmm. push-ups, 200 squats or deadlifts with a 50-pound kettlebell, and then run another mile. It's terrible. And yesterday, while on the first mile, my knee kind of like gave out, like buckled, you know.
Oh,
it doesn't, it doesn't hurt, but it just gives out. And I'm like, okay, that's dumb. So like, I'm charting it every day, and I'm putting them on Instagram and Twitter. And yeah, I just have knee sad face next to day.
Yeah, I saw that. Yeah,
next to day five. I'm going to change it. I'm going to take out the kettlebell and yeah. just do like the air, because it's too much. And even now, I haven't done it. I'm going to do it as soon as we finish this podcast here, as soon as we finish recording. I'll see how long I can go, because I'm not sure if I can really hold up with it, because just being older, I'm trying to do it while I can, but I've always had more ambition than talent, and I think I might have bit off a little more than I can chew.
It does sound like quite intense. Like, I personally could not do that, but you probably work out a lot more than me. I went back to the gym for the first time since I moved into my new house, so the first time in like 2 months. I went back yesterday, and I just like really eased myself in and listened to a little bit of my audiobook and just had a really chilled one. But I do feel good for having gotten back to it.
And see, that's good. And do you think you have a lot of self-discipline when it comes to while you're working out?
Oh, no.
Okay.
No,
not going to work
mental.
Out. Okay. Oh, okay. But not going to work out, but like while you're working out.
It's like a real mental struggle for me to okay. keep going. Yeah. Honestly, it's like an internal battle with myself, because like I don't like to run. Like, I really can't run. So I just do on the treadmill, I'll have like an incline of 12 and on a speed of like 3. So it's just like a fast walk, but on a quite a high incline. And I just do that for like half an hour. And like 10 minutes in, I'm like, I hate this. I'm getting off. I'm bored. I want to be somewhere else. So it's more just like trying to keep myself focused. Like, I can't have the time up on the screen. I have to just have, I think in my gym, they have these things where you can like pretend you're walking through a forest. So I have that up on the screen. I have the Last Wish audiobook playing, and I just have to like, it's a real mental struggle for me.
Okay, I'm glad you brought that up, because that's exactly what I'll do when I get on a treadmill, because I can't run I can't run on a treadmill. Like, it's
all right.
It's confined. It's boring in that sense. I need to feel like I'm going somewhere when I'm running. But I do mm-hmm. put, like you said, the treadmill, and I'll do a little warm up, and then I'll alternate it kind of between 10 and like 13 on an incline.
Yeah.
But what I do is I'll put on a show, because I can't listen to something because I'll get distracted. I'm sorry. I won't get distracted, and I'll start thinking about, oh, I don't want to run. I don't want to do all that. But if I put on a show, then time just kind of goes away. So that might be something to think about, is try to find like yeah. a 20 or 30 minute show. Because right now, Curb Your Enthusiasm on HBO, that's like the that's the main show I'm watching. And so that's Sunday nights. And so I won't watch it on Sunday night. I'll wait until maybe I have to go do that. And that's 30 to 40 minutes that I know will completely distract me to do that
yeah.
terrible walk.
So I need a video or something to keep me fully distracted, you think?
Yeah, something you maybe have seen before, or something you don't really have to pay that much attention to. Like Curb Your Enthusiasm, you don't. It's not this intricate story. It's just a comedy where basically nothing happens, if anybody doesn't know what that is. Yeah,
it's just guy, an easy watch.
Yeah, it can't be something that's really intense and you have to pay attention and all that. Your mind can wander a little bit. Mm-hmm. But like, I'm the reason I put this up on Twitter and put it up on Instagram, it isn't like to show off. It literally also is to hold myself accountable. Because if I wasn't doing that, I would have stopped doing these workouts. Because
they're
horrible while I'm doing it. But then once I finish, I'm like, good, I'm finished and I can put it up. And so that's kind of why I do it, is to like hold myself accountable. So maybe that's something you can do, like even in your Discord.
Yeah, put something in there.
Yeah.
Yeah, I do sometimes, like if I'm, you know, writing a post on there, I'll say, someone at me in the morning and make sure I'm going to the gym.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's definitely, I agree, getting somebody else to hold you accountable. That's why I used to like having a gym buddy as well, because like days when I'd wake up and be like, I don't really want to go.
Yeah.
But if I know I've got somebody relying on me, I'll definitely show up.
Yeah. But that could be something too, like a community thing is in the Discord. Yeah. Get people who are working out, and you could even say like, hey, for this month, I'll pick one thing to do. You pick one little thing to do and we'll do them every day. And then you can put in there. And another reason I time it, I should say that I time this workout I'm doing because it makes it the competitive thing for me. You know, it kind of pushes me to do it and try to beat certain times. Otherwise,
see
I would
can improve.
Yeah. Otherwise, I'd be out there for like 3 hours just like slowly doing it. And like you said, it's kind of one of those that one day is real bad. It's like, oh, man, that's not good. I need to pick that up. And so, yeah, I do think that's something if anybody's trying to work. And if anybody out there who's like, man, I want to get back to working out, but I don't want to go. I tell everybody this, just do body weight things. And so if it's a push-ups, you know, I know upper body things, this isn't being sexist, but it's just generally harder for women, upper body strength-wise, like a pull-up or a push-up. But if if you're a man or a woman and you can't do that many, use your knees. Just do them on your knees.
And work towards it.
Yeah, do as many as you can. I tell everyone that. I'm like, start out with push-ups. I go the first day, do 3 burnout sets. So do as many push-ups as you can. Like push yourself as hard as you can. Stop. Take about a 30-second break. Do as many as you can. Stop. Take a 30-second break. And then do as many as you can. Do that 3 times and do that every day. Mm-hmm. You will notice a massive change. I promise people that. Because like right now, I'll generally do like 15 to 20 push-ups like it's absolutely nothing. But it really wasn't that long ago when I could only do 10.
Yeah.
But you just have to build
towards
it.
So once you start doing something consistently is when you see the massive difference. I think that's the thing that I really struggle with. Like, I want instant results and it's never, ever going to happen. Like, doing one workout yesterday, yeah, I can feel it today. But I will never notice a difference unless I'm doing that a few times a week or at least.
Yeah, it's so much of it is the commitment and consistency for sure.
Yeah, 100%.
As mentioned in the opener, if you're listening on Apple Podcasts, please rate and review this as it means a lot to the analytics, help with searches. Please tell people about it. Again, whether it be Reddit, Twitter, Instagram, anywhere you find people that may be interested in The Witcher 3, a lot of people are out there. Just let them know about it. Greatly appreciate it. You can find us on Twitter at Witcher Podcast. Again, you know, send us thoughts here, send us questions, discussions, anything you want to talk about. We both are on that account, so we'll be able to respond to that usually pretty quickly, no matter who is on there. You can also email us at witcherpod@gmail.com. And Lucy, where can we find you?
I am Lucy J. Robin on pretty much all social media, I think, but I'm mainly on Twitter and Twitch, and then we'll pop my Discord link in the show notes as well.
You can find me on Twitter at FoxBride4, on Twitch at TheFoxBride. And join us next time on The Path, as I forgot to write in what I was going to say. So we're going to continue the Witcher 3 main story quest.